Drifter's not here anyway. I was gonna mention that writing this morning.
Yes.
It was because you had mentioned that before. And what mm-hmm. it is the old time hymns are pretty much follow the old church narrative. So
and Scott, I appreciate that writing. It was good. And I would like to allow everybody this week to go out there and find it and read it, because it's a great prelude to what I want to talk about next week.
Oh,
so you're a week ahead.
Oh, well, Dennis, could we start out with you reading the scripture that you'd mentioned on the email list?
Good plan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, John 17, and this is concordant. So it's going to be a little more awkward and interesting. I think I've mentioned to you, he, when he wrote this, it's back in the 20s, and they still considered anything Jesus said having to be in the words of thee and thou. I don't know why, but anyway.
Okay.
Kind of sounds like an old hymn.
These things speaks Jesus, lifting his eyes to heaven. He said, Father, come has the hour. Glorify thy son, that thy son may or should be glorifying thee, according as thou hast given him authority over all flesh, that everything which thou hast given him, he should be giving it to them, even life aeonian.
Aeonian?
Now, verse 1 and 2. Glorify thy son, that thy son should be glorifying thee. What did he pray for?
For us to be one with the Father.
That's not what it says.
But that's what you've been telling us.
So listen.
You prayed to glorify God.
Yeah, so what is in this glorifying? What is he talking about? What do you think? What does it mean to glorify? Father, glorify thy son, that thy son should be glorifying you. Let's get away from the these and thou.
So if God is all about giving, serving, loving, mm-hmm. not about himself, mm-hmm. so what if he was glorified, he would be all giving, all right? I mean, all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All loving of all his creation, he would be known too,
mm-hmm.
which is as we've discussed, that's very important to God to be mm-hmm. known.
Mm-hmm. What is if you read the little the chapters or articles I sent to you this week? Mm-hmm. Hopefully, you got an idea. What is God's greatest desire?
To be known.
Why does God have a problem with being known?
You kind of hate to say it's a problem for him.
Yeah,
I know.
But, you know.
God doesn't have a problem.
He's the creator of all. He's all in all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's his heart's desire.
Okay.
Yeah, but so many people today and so many movements today do not want to know him.
Right.
You know, they want to denounce him. Their perception of him is incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
And we as even we who profess to be Christian mm-hmm. have done a terrible, terrible job of making not only God, but Jesus known.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
David, you and I discussed yesterday morning a pretty good point of why most people hate Christians. And it's because we adhere to that legalistic system where the behavior, you know, we see the bad behaviors in others, and we automatically assume God's going to take revenge on that person because mm-hmm. of the behavior that they're involved in. Mm-hmm. And you have the people in the outside world, the people that we should be reaching out to. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame them for being, having a harsh attitude about Christianity because we brought it on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. We like to preach unconditional love, but we are terrible at showing it.
Let me throw in, my life is over. My desire to be known or whatever like that is not that I am Christ and Christ is me, and mm-hmm. I'm just his face. Mm-hmm. does it really matter that much how much we reach out to people or not? That it's really all in his hand. Mm. He said he would build his church. Mm-hmm. What does that make sense?
Well, I think
what you're saying, Arnold, at least what I'm hearing, is if we're reaching out to people on our own accord, it becomes self-serving.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah.
If we're allowing God to bring the people or to bring the connections to us, to connect us with others, to connect others with us, then it's going to be his doing and his building, not ours. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I love that.
Yeah, I think it's when we target people, it's ineffective.
And it's also kind of maybe a bit condescending. I don't know, in a way. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm naturally lazy, so that really appeals to me. You know, like I don't go out searching for it. But they're like, if I'm talking with someone, there's no way for me to not just be myself and speak truth, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
David, I think about your own ministry. Well, you know, what we refer to as the coffee shop ministry, where all you were doing is doing your own study when you were down there in the morning or whenever you were there. And it was, different people who approached you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that was an awesome 6 years or whatever it was that went on. I still have relationship with a few of those people today. Mm-hmm. It was for me a very wonderful time of growing and learning how God works. People would come up to me, some would engage me and were interested in what I had to do. Others maybe were a bit offended by it. But yeah, I didn't pursue anybody. They, God just brought whoever to me. Sometimes very lengthy conversations, sometimes very short. Sometimes relationships came out of it, sometimes it didn't. But it was all his thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Guys, listen to this. This now is out of the New King James. This is Jeremiah. 9th chapter and verse 23. Let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, let not the mighty man glory in his might, nor let the rich man glory in his riches. Let him who glories glory in this, that he understands and knows me.
Wow.
So nice conversation stopper there, Dennis.
How's that?
A nice conversation stopper.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Curtain read drop. Read that last
okay.
Read that last sentence
again. Look at the time. It's been
yeah.
nice talking to you guys.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. So But let him who glories glory in this, that he understands and knows me.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you say about the verse that the church uses a lot, as far as the discipleship, where he says to go and make disciples of mm-hmm. of the other world?
Yeah,
that's so overused.
Yeah, and the word is as you are going.
Right.
We've made it an imperative.
Well, we've made it almost like a commandment.
It is. Yeah, it's not. Jesus says, well, as you are going.
Difference. That's a significant difference if you read it that way.
Exactly.
You know, as you're going.
Yeah, yeah. As life is David. Go ahead.
Did Jesus say that at the Last Supper?
No, it was.
Okay.
We're not too sure exactly what the chronology of when he said it, but it was in those last hours. Yes, actually it was after he ascended. There's a way
yeah, it was after the resurrection.
Yeah, after the resurrection, not the ascension, just before the ascension, his last words with the disciples, and as you are going mm-hmm. make disciples. In other words,
which makes sense, just speak truth.
Yes, as you're going through life, God is going to use you. God is mm-hmm. going to speak through you. You don't have
I'm sorry.
No.
I have ADD.
Here's what we have as far as what it tells us. Yes, God is gonna bring those circumstances before us mm-hmm. for people who are seeking Him.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, He's also going to put the words in our mouth that we should speak
mm-hmm.
when those circumstances come.
Yeah.
Which makes sense that he would say it after his ascension, because then we all have, you know, we're all able to go mm-hmm. forth with him mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. do that.
Sorry to cut you off, Beth. That's what I do.
Oh, no, I do it too. I'm horrible.
The problem with Zoom, we're not able to catch the whole context of our inflections mm-hmm. and so forth. And so it's almost like we need to raise hands before we
Could we get like a little green light that we just push?
Yeah, right.
Like a paddle.
Or I can just mute everybody until you want to, you know, make sure.
There you go, Dan.
Yeah, you've done that to me before.
This is a conversation, right?
Oh my God.
So
a pastor, always a pastor.
So as you are going, there's something about you that is fulfilling the desire of God. God's greatest desire is that he gets to be seen and known. And we say a problem, but it's not a problem for God. This is how he's planned it. We look at it as a problem, but it's simply that God has to be, he has to find a way to be visible. How does he become visible?
You know, the old adage is easier to ride a horse the direction it's going, but we just ride the horse that way. Exactly. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Jesus is a very interesting prophecy. And it's a little bit subtle because in some translations it doesn't pick it up. I think it's Hebrews 8:10. But a body you have prepared for me. You didn't desire sacrifices and all the other religious things, but a body you have prepared for me. You ever realize that God wasn't into all the religious laws and sacrifices and that was on the request of the Jews. That was not his desire. His desire was to be revealed and known, as so many scriptures in the Old Testament refer to it. Psalms 46, know that I am God. Isaiah 43, that you may know and believe. Jeremiah 9. And then we get into John 17:3, that they may know you. We didn't get to that text this morning, but it's now it is aeonian life that they may know thee. And that's what I want to, next week, I want to talk about aeonian life. And Scott touched on that in his writing today. So God, his greatest desire, his heart is that people know him. Mm-hmm. And as somebody referred to earlier, there's a lot of different ideas on who God is. And much of it has come down to us from the perspective of the tree of knowledge. He is seen mostly in Christianity as a moral judge, a bit tyrannical, a bit untrustworthy in that regard. You never know if you're on the good or on the bad.
Mm-hmm.
You hope you are by the end.
Yeah.
If you ever read any of Augustine's work, and unfortunately, Augustine is the foundation of much of Christian theology today.
The correct theology, according to my mom.
Exactly.
Presbyterians.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You need to set her straight, Beth.
And Presbyterians, PCA, not USA. That's not correct.
There you go.
Those are the baddies.
So Augustine then was the founding, he was the person on which John Calvin took most of his theological study, and Calvin himself viewed God as an angry God, angry at sinners, and called them his theology of total depravity. And so man was worthless in Calvin's eyes. And it was only by the fact of God, out of some whim, choose some and not the others. And you had no choice in the matter.
So, Dennis, do you see Billy Graham as being a legalistic type of preacher?
No, not legalistic, Scott. Billy Graham was a great evangelist in the tradition of 20th century Christianity. He was simply espousing what most Christianity, evangelical Christianity, was teaching.
But my point, my point, like I wrote this morning, is how many people did he introduce Jesus to?
He did, but it was kindergarten level,
right,
Christianity. You remember the three levels: the mm-hmm. child, son, and father level revelation. Remember that? There are three levels or phases of revelation of understanding God.
But then again, how many of those people that he introduced Christ to
mm-hmm.
went on to increase their knowing of him into the different levels?
You have no way of knowing that.
No, we don't.
No. Yeah. But
and it's really not important.
No.
Let me say this, Dave. I consider myself a product. My theological foundation and my framework in which I was indoctrinated and trained. And I've shared that before. The framework was, God is someone I hope to eventually know and be in presence with after I die. In other words, I hope to go see him someday.
On Scott, your question, the church has always been hung up on numbers.
Yeah.
Okay? Baptists, especially.
And they're always hung up on immediate transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So addressing your question, how many people pursued God as a result of Billy Graham? As I said, there's no way of knowing.
No.
But the other part of that question would be, how long after they heard Billy Graham speak
mm-hmm.
did something take hold?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I heard a lot of preaching in my preteen and teen years, mm-hmm. and even as a young adult, but it didn't take hold until my 40s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so we have to get over this immediate transformation mindset that we have, and allow God to bring them to him or to bring them to his son in his time.
Well, Billy Graham was just using the medium that he had to introduce Christ to the world.
But I don't know if this is true or not. There was no aftercare, so to speak. And I read where a lot of the people who went, you know, the altar call or whatever, you know, there were agents there, and then they would send them to, they would plug them in with Catholic churches, oddly enough. I don't know if that's true or not, but I read it.
Well, remember, Dennis, remember what the, that was the same issue they had with the promise keepers. Whether it was, you know, the conference would come into town and, you know, be, you know, a good cheering session for a couple of days. And then after that, there was no follow-up. And
okay. So I don't know if this relates to you, but if you ever went to a Graham Crusade or something similar in which there was an altar call. And if you ever went through those responses and you found yourself going down to the altar, so to speak, and meeting with a counselor and praying the prayer. And then what happened in your life subsequent to that? Let's say a week after that, were you confident that you understood God or knew God?
Well, I was encouraged to go to find a church and that preached the Bible and to surround myself by some Christian people and grow. I mean, that was, I think, a good thing.
Because
there was some follow-up. I think even Billy Graham had some follow-up with these people.
So I guess my question, though, and I'm looking at my own experience, the question still lingered in my head. I did the thing, and some of you, I think, Arnold, from you, attest to this. Yeah. I've made the path down to the altar numbers of times.
Well, and, but this was a real one.
You know, Dennis, I remember following you. I remember following you and going to, to the couple of those keepers conferences.
Right.
One of them was with Andy Williams. The other one was with you. And this is while I was still going to New Hope.
Sure.
And up until about maybe 2 weeks after the conference. You could really sense, you know, in the men in the church that there was that excitement there.
Sure.
No, it didn't increase. It decreased.
And most of the guys would recognize, would say, yeah, I've been to the mountain.
Yeah.
But life is not on the top of the mountain. And so when they came finally down off the mountain and hit life, they had to ask themselves, what happened there? Did I really get it? Is this all there is to it? There were questions and ongoing, in some cases, doubt. And people would say, yeah, I did that. Didn't work for me.
Well, Dennis, you'll probably remember the problem we had with the men's conferences that we put on. The follow-up had two problems. One, finding men who would step up to do the follow-up with others.
Yeah.
And then finding men who were truly interested in follow-up. And both were very lacking.
Yeah. But Dave, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Volunteers who would step in and lead the way, and then even if you did get into those groups, it came down to how much you really committed yourself to that process. And even then, you could go through numbers of these programs and follow-ups and studies and so forth, and the question would still be in men's minds. Have I arrived?
Yeah.
Am I like Jesus yet?
Like Paul said, I finished the race.
Yeah. So here's what I'm trying to say. There, with the Billy Graham and the evangelistic going forward and then getting into groups and follow up is all about the processing of me.
Yeah.
All right. And it's as Arnold, as you referred to, it's that assumption that I still have, I'm in control of my life.
Yeah.
There's me. And then if that process works well enough, and if I stay faithful enough, then I will get to cash in on the promise that I will eventually see God. I will eventually go to heaven. And that's where God is. Okay.
Yeah, he's up there, isn't he?
Yeah. I remember I said Franklin Graham followed in the same pattern here several years ago, came to Canby, had a big crusade. He said, I'm here to give you the good news. I'm going to tell you how you can all go to heaven.
Yeah. The traveling salvation show.
So that was the picture of the goal. Nothing about understanding God here now present.
Or glorifying him, as Jesus said.
and understanding what Jesus is saying there. Father, glorify your son. In other words, reveal yourself in me.
Yeah.
As I want to reveal me in you.
David Fulton shared a story with me when one time, you know, you might not remember, David, but it was when you had, you know, in your first few times as going to New Hope, and how, you know, how stoic you were that it was the right place for you to be.
My initial visit to New Hope was panic.
Yeah.
I mean, literally. It was the first time Ray Cotton was pastor. It was the first time I had heard anybody talk about Jesus in a loving way.
Mm-hmm.
And how much he loved us. And I literally panicked as he spoke, and it took all of my mental and physical strength not to run out of that church.
Yeah.
I mean, the sermon was so freaking me out. I likened it to when I was going through basic training, and we were crawling under machine gun fire, and they started throwing tear gas on us, and I couldn't get my gas mask case to open so I could get my gas mask on.
What on earth was he saying?
Huh?
What on earth was Ray saying? I don't.
He was just talking about the love of Jesus Christ.
And that made you panic.
It made me absolutely panic, because where I was at in my life at that time, I was recently divorced from Dawn. I didn't understand it at the time, but my biggest problem was self-condemnation and self-unforgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about Jesus Christ, who loves us and forgives us, and I couldn't accept it.
Okay.
It was scaring the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But Scott's right. Eventually, after talking to Ray Cotton, I sat down with him on a one-on-one, fully expecting him to tell me to get the hell out of the church and never darken the doorways again, because I was such a bad person. long story short, he set me up with Tom and Marianne Willey in the study of Luke, which has its own irony to it. But yeah, Scott is right. I eventually realized this is where I belong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But okay, so... what's panicked you, let me suggest, David, that you, for the first time, was seeing a revelation of God that you had never seen before.
Yeah.
You've never known God as a lover.
No, see, originally I was raised Methodist, and even in the Methodist church, I don't recall ever getting that message.
No.
My only real recollection of the Methodist church was when I was about 12, we were talking about the miracles of Jesus Christ, how he raised the dead, healed the sick. Uh-huh. And when it came up to walking on the water, he probably really wasn't. He was walking on rocks beneath the water. And I'm thinking, walking on water would be, to me, a piece of cake compared to raising the dead and healing the sick. But my adult, what do I know? And then my mom got us into Christian Science, and that was just
nightmare. Yeah, really blurred the picture.
Their Christian Science has nothing in it about love whatsoever. Nope. Nothing. And so, yeah, to hear Ray Cotton talk about Jesus as a person who loves us, forgives us.
Are you throwing up?
Holy cow, it was, like I say, in a lot of where I was at in my own life, really contributed to that anxiety.
Yeah.
You see that, Dennis? When he first came to New Hope, you scared the hell out of him.
Yeah. I I didn't, but God did. God was showing up and allowing David to get to know him.
Yeah.
See, guys, what I'm getting at is that orientation to God, as I was in my formative years, I said to Scott this week, I remember going to Billy Graham when I was I couldn't have been 6 or 7 years old. My folks went and were enamored with Billy Graham. He put up a big tent over right across the street from Benson High School.
Yeah.
And it was something else. And those days,
to this day, that property is a car dealership.
And, but when he came to Portland, it was headline news and people flocked. They wanted to see this show. Billy Graham was a fiery, in those days, he preached a lot of hell and damnation.
What would you estimate the crowd at when you were there?
Oh boy. As a kid, you know, there probably wasn't more than 500. It seemed like huge multitudes, you know, as a little boy.
Yeah.
But that was believe me, that theology, that orientation then was the foundation for my Christianity as I grew at church. And it's almost like the ritual of going forward then was a regular pattern. Because if you had these so-called evangelistic meetings, what we call revivals in our churches, they were simply trying to put the Graham environment in a miniature scale in your home church. So the pastor would try to preach the most fiery, condemning, guilt-ridden message that he could to get everybody to realize, oh, I'm a sinner. I've got to get forgiven. I've got to get my, make sure I have the gift of eternal life. In other words, I make sure I've got the ticket. But I struggled. I never knew if I really had the ticket.
See, what I didn't like about New Hope was off and on the positivity. If you can understand that.
Well, sure.
They would have the what they call the Garden of Prayer, and I look back on it now, and the Garden of Prayer was nothing but a way to make you feel guilty for something that you probably did.
Well, that's your perception, Scott. But for a lot of people, it was a very touching, a very, very intimate time in which they could feel close to God and pray and be felt in close with someone else praying with them. It's a very tearful time. And that it became a real strong mainstay in the Galloway environment, Sunday morning positive.
Yeah.
We hope.
See, I missed that time because I came in after Dale left.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I missed the, I missed those days.
So I can hear, I'm trying to say, I don't know all through my years. In fact, I can say surely, I didn't really know God.
Yeah. Well, not like you know him today. Yeah,
I knew what it was. I knew everything about getting the ticket, and I knew everything about making sure that I kept that ticket front and center. Understanding what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure that I appreciated the gift of salvation. I was staying in the mindset, staying in the present with trying to be in a place where God could say, good and, you know, well done, good and faithful servant.
Yeah.
And when time came, and in those years, everybody was assured, oh, he's coming again soon. I remember
then as you and I talk, and everything that we have learned from day one was all part of God's journey.
Mm-hmm.
And the important thing, I believe, is that we kept searching. We kept asking questions. We kept studying so that God has now led us to where we're at.
Yes.
A deeper understanding of who he is.
Yeah.
A deeper understanding of who we are and Jesus is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Scott, just like the Garden of Prayer, where it had a negative overtone to you, that is still part of your journey that God is using to grow you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just like he's using it for those people who found it very positive.
Yeah.
All of our journeys are different.
Mm-hmm.
And although Dennis and I have kind of chuckled from time to time about some of the things we used to teach and we now cringe, it was all necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was all part of our individual journey.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important part is that we have stayed hungry and searching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this isn't the life of the believer isn't a one size fits all thing. It's everyone's different.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about having, you know, being scared out of your wits, you know, when you first went to New Hope. Well, I remember getting baptized there, and the first face that I saw when they pulled me up out of that water was Dennis.
And you were so happy, weren't you? That there.
Oh yeah, I was I don't remember. I don't know if you remember a guy by the name of Chuck O'Connor.
Oh yeah,
yeah. He was he was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I saw you, you know, when I came up out of the water, and then I looked down in the front row, and there's Chuck, you know, just cheering.
Yeah. Great times. And that's all part of that journey is of, you know, we were on this journey getting to know or getting to prepare for heaven.
Yeah.
All right.
We're still on the journey.
Well, yes, but now the journey isn't about getting to heaven. We realized that our end goal was, we're learning and now seeing that was misconstrued. That was misunderstanding.
You mean you're changing the rules of middle of the game
here? Hey, the rules got changed.
Well, Dennis, you said over and over again that you really, your heart's desire was know Christ, to know God. That's what was driving you, and it was driving me too.
Yeah.
Not the numbers and how many people went forward or how many people that we knew that we introduced to that process, but to know and I guess to influence someone else to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a heart's desire, really, of every human being. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say that's the heart at all of our journey is is just wanting to know God more, wanting to learn more.
Isn't that interesting? If that's our heart desire, how does that, relate to God's desire?
Well, they're one of the
matches. It lines up.
Hello.
I mean, if Christ is in us, then his desires are our desires.
Okay. So the desire to know Christ, yes, was very much a whole new motivation for me. Beginning, I can't say exactly when it started. The thirst, somewhere shortly after meeting you, David, in the early 2000s, and then really intensified. I remember in 2010. I remember praying a prayer. Lord, I want to know you.
I've had that effect on people. They go, oh my God, I better know God, because if I'm hanging around this guy, holy crap.
Yeah. And so as I look back on it, I say, thank you, God, for instilling that desire, making me thirsty, making me hungry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jesus said, if anyone comes to me, he needs to be thirsty.
And Jesus also says in the Bread of Life sermon, I think three times, that nobody comes to him until God has prepared them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
And this is something that we, as a religion, forget.
Yeah,
that it's God's timing, not ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You look at the. I get the whole Galatians 2:20 thing. You know, that's our belief, and that's that's what we believe in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I think more of a key verse than that is Galatians 1:15. Because it wasn't, one of the key phrases in verse 15 is when it pleased God. That's when he revealed Paul's true identity.
Yep. When it pleased God, and you think about the journey that Paul was on.
Yeah.
He was actually on a journey to annihilate those who were claiming this new understanding, this new revelation.
Right.
Think about the people he threw in prison. They're probably thinking, why wasn't God pleased earlier before I got thrown in prison?
Yeah. So glory is a lot about God getting to be known.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How many of you can say, I really know who I am?
That's a constant revelation in itself.
Okay.
You know.
Can you know yourself? One question, it's double-sided. Can you know God if you don't know yourself?
No.
You're looking for the answer, no. The correct answer is no.
Yeah, because how can you know yourself if you don't know God?
Yeah.
If we're made in his image and likeness, then we have to pursue what his image is.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, we will discover who we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Jesus know who he was?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that statement, that request in John 17, 1 and 2, does that indicate anything about how much Jesus understood?
Mm-hmm.
Who he was, mm-hmm. and his role.
Yeah.
I and the Father are one. You see me, you see the Father. That's a pretty strong definition of who he was and what his purpose in life was.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if the Pharisees were against him.
Well, yeah. Yeah. They were early. They were early Billy Grammers.
I try to tell my wife that when she sees me, she sees God.
Yeah.
How's that working out for you?
Well, she said something about she was going to help me see God.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I know.
Something along that line.
Just take my advice, David. Don't take her up on that.
Right.
By God, I'm going to help you find God. Or see God.
Exactly.
By God.
Well, but that's Christianity. Most of the way that we've been brought up, and that's how we think.
Mm-hmm. We sit there and describe that, but gee whiz, God's in control. All Jesus mm-hmm. built His church, His mm-hmm. church, and that's the phase we've been going through
yeah.
the Catholic Church and mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. Council of Nicaea and all forward.
Yeah. So in Jeremiah 31, we see the covenant that God wanted to establish.
Yeah, that's so Old Testament.
And in other words, what's a covenant? It's a promise. It's an intention. And so verse 31 through 34. This is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel. Da-da-da. I will put my law in their minds and write on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. No more shall every man teach his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they all shall know me, from the least of them to the greatest of them, says the Lord. And then the writer of Hebrews repeats that covenant in Hebrews 8 as a statement of how that covenant has been fulfilled. No one has to teach you how to know the Lord. You know Him already. And how do you know Him?
Because we are Him.
Okay. He lives in you.
Duh.
Galatians 1:16. Jesus was revealed in me.
Sure does take the wind out of bringing people to Christ. And as Dave said, the numbers game. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So what... You know, the evangelistic style and process of most of Western Christianity, evangelical Christianity in particular, you can say it has produced Billy Graham had a lot of people that were introduced to Jesus and became kindergarten level Christians. But God's desire is that you move on in your journey to become sons and then knowing Him as Father. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that, God willing, next week or in the coming weeks. As the prayer goes on, John 17, the glory. And I've given them aeonian life that they may know you.
What does that word mean?
Well, that's what we want to talk about.
Well, for those of us that don't want to wait, a week or two before for a definition, what does the word mean?
Okay. Well, look it up. The word, look it up. Aeonian.
Come on.
The word eternal, by the way, is a very an unfortunate translation of the word aeonian. Look up, go to your internet and just type in aeonian. E-O-N-I-O-N. Aeonian life. Eon, it's the root word is eon, E-O-N. And what is aeonian life? It's somehow keyed or connected, I should say, with this knowledge of God.
You tried to correct me to onion.
So we're talking about the glory of man And the old Westminster Confession, in which our sister here was raised and trained and went through her catechism.
The definition I get is a false theology born by old aging pastors.
Yeah. You were taught, Beth, that the glory of man is to, the purpose of man is to glorify God.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you did that is that you adhered to the set of rules and conduct explained in the Old and New Testaments.
Right.
You remember that about the Westminster Confession?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. Probably. Well, I was naive enough to think that, you know, because I remember telling you, I knew that I carried Jesus around in my heart.
Yeah.
Which made me, you know, I had to be careful where I took him.
Yeah.
Right. You know, there was a lot of guilt. I snuck in underage to the movie Flashdance, you know, and then felt bad afterwards. Like I made God watch Flashdance, and that is a sin, you know, just
don't bring him to the wrong places, whatever you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was just such a skewed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I got some of it, but, mm-hmm. you know.
So you know. The confession, which became the foundation of, or the background for the purpose-driven life, the book.
Mm-hmm.
Many of you read, and I know we, back in 2003 or four at New Hope. David, you were there at that time.
Yeah, I was all the rage.
Right. We were all forced to go through the all church campaign of the purpose driven life.
Oh, and Rick Warren.
I forget who said to me sometime after that, which just shot the hell out of that whole study. They said, nowhere does God ever tell us to be purpose-driven?
Right. Yeah.
That kind of sounds like something you would say, David.
By 2007, that book had sold 30 million copies, and that was just the beginning. It went on to be an all-time bestseller.
That book made him.
That book made him
who he is.
Yeah. It made Rick Warren. And then came out The Purpose-Driven Church.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Purpose-driven. Oh, everything was purpose driven.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, purpose driven. Well,
that's marketing.
And I look back on it, and right after we'd finished that campaign, the lead pastor said, "Well, what's our next book?"
what was that other book that came out? By Pratt or somebody that talked about, as Christians, we need to just throw everything on the table and say, God, you show me what I keep. And what was the name of that? But anyway, it was about the time I moved over here back in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And the church I was attending was preaching on this book about how we're supposed to give everything up, hints that you need to give more to the church and all this. And then the author did a follow-up book about how the church was supposed to start giving stuff up.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I asked the pastor if he was going to preach on that, and he said no.
Yeah.
So that was the start of my fall from grace with that pastor at that church.
Yeah.
So because, you know, I had read both books,
mm-hmm.
and at the time they made sense. Okay, I need to really focus on doing what God wants me to do.
There you go.
And then the follow-up book was the church needed to focus on doing what God wanted them to do.
But yeah, and David, you're saying it exactly. Your statement epitomizes the whole theme. What am I supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
Richard Pratt was his name, I think.
Richard Pratt, yes. Yes. Pratt. And
what was the name of the book?
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. We never, it was too scary. So our lead didn't want to do that one, Dave. Yeah. So anyway, what do I need to do? It was the mantra of Christianity.
Yeah.
God says, you don't need to do anything. You already are who I want you to be.
Right.
You are my glory. That's your purpose. Just be who I've created you to be.
Yeah. That's not what Rick Warren said.
No, obviously not. No.
And he made millions of bucks off of that.
Well, yeah. Top seller.
Ooh, evil, evil.
Yeah. Oh, black cat. Oh, no.
Evil.
Look out.
Well, it folded in so well with the self-help development that I need to get better. And by the way, we rolled up the hill. It's only 10-15 minutes from our home to Rick Warren's church. And now he's retired. We're going to go see him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, he's retired and he's trying to transition and pick his successor.
Oh, boy. Look out.
Yeah. So there's a number of people that are being vetted. So anyway, but it folded in with self-help. We all went through that self-development, read as many books and develop as well as you can.
Yes.
You know, understand yourself. It's all worked out as far as I'm concerned.
I know, but that doesn't sell, Arnold.
Yeah, no, it really has.
It's not a good marketing plan.
Yeah.
Well, it's all worked out for God because the whole culture has gone through that, and his church has.
I'm going to have to sign off. I've got a 10:30 appointment. I'm going
Okay, Dave. Good seeing you, Dave.
Look forward to seeing you next week.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Have a good one. Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
And I should probably wrap up here too, but he says it well. We've gone through that that phase as a culture, Christian culture especially.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think we really are, I'm speaking for more than just us here. People who are, I think more and more they're realizing they're on a journey to find God. To really desire to know God.
Yeah.
And it begins with knowing yourself, who you really are, and how you're created by God to be his image and likeness. This is the whole heart of God. We could spin off of this, by the way. I don't know if you realize it. How do you pray? How do we know how to pray?
Well, stay tuned next weekend, folks, because I've already gotten a few blog page ideas this morning.
All right, Scott, you go for it.
it's a must read for us.
Yes.
Yeah, it should be required reading for everything.
Yeah, before the conference call.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think I'm going to start charging Scott, $5 Scott, access.
Scott, thank you for doing that. That it's intriguing to us.
Yeah,
it's growing.
You bet. Well, I enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
The story behind that was after my mom passed away, and Dennis thought I needed a hobby, so he said, "Well, why don't you
so try blame it on me?"
He said, "Why don't you try writing?" I said, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
And ever since then, he's been openly critical of my abilities. And
that's the problem. Well, if you write something today, you put it out there. You put it in the hands of somebody else. It's going to be criticized.
Yeah.
You're known as the Peanut Gallery, Dennis.
Right. All right. Hey, guys.
Well, thank you. Thank you all. Thank you for bringing us together on this.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, grace on everybody. Have a great week.
Tell David you too. Keep David.
Do you know Scott? Did he talk to you?
He sent me a text a few minutes ago, said he's been up and down, but he's getting a little better.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
We got to pray for him this week and for Beth. All right, guys.
Thank you.
Beth, take care of yourself in the process.
Yeah, yeah, no, I am. Yeah. I am. Yeah. I'm trying.
All right, guys. Okay. All right.
Next time. Thank you. Bye-bye.